It's time for America Outdoors Radio, the show that covers the outdoor scene across the U.S. of A. and the entire continent. Fishing, hunting, conservation, outdoor recreation, and great destinations, we cover it all every week. It's your country, your outdoors. Let's explore it together with your host, John Cruz.
Welcome aboard. Are you wondering where the best crappie lakes are in America? Well, the folks at WiredToFish.com got a panel of experts together, and between them, they came up with the top 25 crappie fishing destinations in America. We can't run through them all, but we'll give you the top six. Coming in at number six is Truman Lake in Missouri, a place you'll be hearing more about during this show when we talk to Daryl Van Vactor with Crappie USA. The number five lake, Lake of the Pines in Texas. It's got big black and white crappie. You can catch them both here, especially in the fall and winter months. Coming in at number four is the St. John's River in Florida. Here, you'll find huge, beautifully colored black crappie, and this river fishes best from February to June. The number three lake in America is Lake Darbonne in Louisiana, known as a favorite for tournament anglers because it consistently pumps out limits of fish. Number two, that would be Lake Fork in Texas. It's got big white crappie, nice black crappie. You'll find them both here in great numbers, and the best time to fish for them is February through May. Finally, drum roll please. The number one crappie fishing destination in North America, according to WiredToFish.com, is Granada Lake in Mississippi. It's got huge crappie. You'll find them here at the Crappie Masters Tournament last month. 46 different teams weighed in crappie over 3 pounds. I don't know about you, but that's my kind of big crappie lake. Oh, and for all of you anglers out west complaining about not making the cut, I can tell you Clear Lake in California almost did. It came in at number 8. You can check out the rest of the top 25 crappie fishing destinations by going to WiredToFish.com. As for what we've got for you this week on America Outdoors Radio, we'll be talking more about crappie in just a few minutes when we chat with Daryl Van Vactor. He's the very busy operations manager for the Crappie USA Tournament Series. Daryl will tell you about a couple of tournaments that took place last weekend and some tournaments coming up in the weeks ahead, one of which is paying out some pretty serious money, too. We've got bass fishing coming your way as well towards the end of the program. That's when Walker Smith, the managing editor at WiredToFish.com, joins us again. This time, the topic is about 3 myths you probably subscribe to that are keeping you from catching more largemouth bass this spring. There's white bass to talk about as well, and wild turkeys and morel mushrooms. One place you'll find all three this spring, plus crappie, is in the Show Me State of Missouri. And Brandon Butler, the man behind the Driftwood Outdoors podcast and an outdoors columnist with articles read every week all over Missouri, will join us to tell you more. In addition to this, we'll tell you about a Kentucky angler who went crappie fishing and pulled in a state record of a different species. As you can see, we've got a lot of crappie and bass and more coming your way, and I'm guessing a lot of you will be fishing out of a boat to catch them. That's why you'll want to hear about a new rule that went into effect this month that may well affect you. Next up on America Outdoors Radio, we've got to tell you about a new rule that has gone into effect nationwide, and it's all about those boat engine cutoff switches. With us here to explain exactly what went into effect April 1st is Scott Croft with Boat US. Scott, great to have you on the air.
Thanks for having me.
So, Scott, when I think about those boat cutoff switches, I think about my little skiff. It's got a little outboard on the back, and I'm wearing my life vest, and I've got that red cord attached to the engine. And if I stumble or fall, then, you know, it comes out of the engine, and the engine stops. So what's the new rule?
So this rule addresses the challenge that perhaps slow-moving vessels with an operator at the helm can get ejected, and the boat can turn in what I call a death spiral. What sometimes happens, and you can see these videos, is the operator is ejected and the boat continues because the engine continues to operate, and it turns in a circle and just keeps on going in a circle, unfortunately possibly having a boat prop strike injury. So effective April 1st, there's been a lot of confusion about this, and I'll try to make it as clear as possible. If you have a boat under 26 feet long that's traveling on plane or above displacement speed. That's not trolling, that's not docking, that's not slow speed. Again, under 26 feet, on plane or above displacement speed, and the boat is manufactured after January 2020. That's key.
Ah.
You must have a functioning ECOS engine cutoff switch on that boat. It must be installed and functioning, and you must wear it. So again, for a new boat built after January 2020, under 26 foot in length, and you're on plane or above displacement speed, there's no get out of jail free card, as I've been telling folks. That switch better be there, it better be working, and it better be connected to you. That's because the manufacturers are required after that date to install, have those switches. And this not only includes that tiller outboard cutoff switch that we're all familiar with, it also includes the cutoff switch at the helm, if you have a separate switch, you know, connected to the helm or on the throttle shift mechanism on your right, and wireless ECOS. So you can use a wireless ECOS as you will. But again, if your boat is under 26 feet and it's manufactured after January 2020, you got to have it. Now, boats built before January 2020, here's what's catching everybody. If the boat, that older boat, has a switch, it is installed,
right,
and it is functioning, you have to wear it. If that switch is installed and not functioning, maybe the clip is broke, maybe you don't have the lanyard, the law requires that you do not have to wear it. That's the tricky part here. So again, if your boat's older than January 2020 and your boat has it, maybe it's on the tiller, maybe it's at the helm, maybe you have a wireless ECOS device and it's installed and it's functioning, you got to wear it. But if it is installed and let's say it's damaged or there's a hole at the helm or there's no clip, the law says you do not have to wear it. Now, before everybody goes out and says, well, I'll just, you know, I just won't put the lanyard on. You know, think of this like the seatbelt law. I know seatbelts, when they were made mandatory, caused some people some angst, but you wouldn't have gone out and cut your seatbelts off the car. And what's going to happen is there's already several states that have ECOS laws, about seven of them, Alabama, Arkansas, Illinois, Louisiana, Nevada, New Jersey, and Texas. They currently have a law regardless anyway. So in those states, you're going to have to wear it based on whatever their requirement is. They're slightly different. But the big picture is all states are moving towards a uniform ECOS law. So if you disable it, and then you have to install it back, that's going to be a pain in the butt. But the real thing is, you really want to think about being alone on the boat at the helm and getting ejected from that boat. You really don't want that to happen.
No.
And this law addresses that. But keep in mind, again, the under 26 foot feet when the boat was built. And there's one really final caveat. No matter what kind of boat, if there's an enclosed helm, you do not need to wear an ECOS. Well, that's because you're not going to be ejected from the vessel if the vessel hits rough water or et cetera. You're going to be inside the enclosed helm. So no matter what kind of boat under 26 foot feet, if it has an enclosed helm, you do not need to wear it.
Okay.
So that's the tricky parts of the law. You know, I see, like I say, I see this as being similar to seatbelts. I remember, you know, when seatbelts came on, a lot of people grumbled about them. They're sort of second hat today. I think there's going to be a lot of education. We're told the Coast Guard is focusing on education and not enforcement. And this law only applies to federally navigable waters. People want to know what's that mean. I think the simplest way to say it is if there is a Coast Guard presence on your waterway, that means a federal navigable waterway.
Okay.
So, you know, there's a million rabbit holes. I have people asking me, well, what about this pond or what about that? The Coast Guard does have a great Q&A for some of those questions, and you can find those at boatus.com/newsroom, boatus.com/newsroom. And there's a March 15th press release on it with a direct link to that Coast Guard Q&A for those folks who have questions, because we've been getting them. You know, there's so many different kinds of boats out there, different kinds of waters, built different years. You know, it's hard to figure out. But just remember, if you're under 26 foot feet and that boat's newer than January 2020, no get out of jail for you. You gotta make sure it's functioning, it's installed, and it's working, because those boats were built with that.
All right, Scott, we are out of time. But again, folks, the new ECOS law, ECOS, of course, being engine cutoff switch, is now in effect on all federally navigable waters across the nation. So find out more at boatus.com/newsroom. Get that link. Find out exactly how it applies to you. Scott, thanks for breaking it down today on America Outdoors.
You're welcome.
book at Sportsman's Cove Lodge?
Why is Alaska like no other place on Earth? It hasn't changed in thousands of years.
From the way you get here on a float plane to the way you go out with the guides and the boats, it's just a professional experience.
And I said, this is as good as it gets. I said, if you can't catch fish here, you can't catch fish anywhere.
Your experience with us will leave you speechless.
Book now at alaskasbestlodge.com.
Hunting and fishing are exercises in hope. Before you head into the woods, you hope to tag out on a deer you'll have to field dress. Before you make that first cast, you hope for a big fish to clean and fillet. When your hopes are realized, you'll need a sharp knife. Whether you sharpen that blade on a power sharpener in the shop or a manual sharpener in the field, WorkSharp has the tool for you. Look for WorkSharp products in sporting goods stores near you or online at WorkSharpTools.com.
Ready to step up to a quality-built rifle or shotgun that's a true classic? Check out Henry Repeating Arms, American-made. There's over 200 models to choose from in a variety of finishes and calibers for hunters and target shooters. Many of these are lever-action models with a look right out of the Old West. Don't be deceived, though. Henry Repeating Arms are modern, rugged, accurate, reliable, and have a lifetime guarantee. Find out more and order a free catalog today at henryusa.com. That's henryusa.com.
Are you looking to reel in the marketing opportunity of a lifetime? Then set the hook, because we've got it right here for you. America Outdoors Radio has sponsorships available, and we offer affordable platforms to reach thousands of listeners interested in fishing, hunting, and the outdoors. Find out more by contacting John Cruz through his website at AmericaOutdoorsRadio.com.
I fish lots of lakes, I fish them all year round. No, I fish lots of lakes, everywhere I'm bound. Can't say which lake's the best until I try all the rest. Going fishing, fishing.
Getting back fishing, to crappie fishing, thought it'd be a good time to check in with Crappie USA. They're celebrating 25 years, and boy, oh boy, they've been running a whole lot of tournaments. We caught up with the very busy operations manager for Crappie USA, Daryl Van Vector. Daryl, great to have you on the air.
Thank you, John. Great to be here, as always.
Like I said, you've been on the road just about every weekend this year, putting together crappie tournaments and also catfish tournaments as part of the King Cat USA series. But let's focus on crappie today, talk about a couple of events that occurred last weekend. One of them was at West Point Lake near LaGrange, Georgia. Tell our listeners how that went.
You know, that went fantastic. A lot of fish caught. Took a little less weight than what we anticipated on West Point. It's actually capable of doing a little better weight-wise, but the winners down there actually had 19.18 pound. Now, that was a two-day event, so it was the best seven fish for each day. So a total of 14 fish weighed 19.18 to win that event. And still over a pound and a quarter average, so really nice fish. And the big fish down there was a 222, which is nearly 2.25 pounds. So really good fish down there. Everyone seemed to catch good numbers of fish. And, you know, West Point's just it's a fantastic area to visit, and all the history in the area. So, you know, a lot of the families go along and enjoy things in the community while the guys are out on the water.
Well, I've heard LaGrange, Georgia is a beautiful place to visit. Going to put that on my list. Something I'd like to mention here, you had some really good participation for this event. It seems like you've been plagued by the weather during several events this year. That was not an issue here. You had a total of 46 boats that fished the event, 16 in the pro division, 30 in the amateur division. Is that kind of the average, or is that better than average?
Well, it's actually, for this year, it's better than average. But for all the previous 24 years, it, of course, is below average. But we're still working out of the COVID situation, and everyone is beginning to get their sea legs back and get back out in the great outdoors. But, you know, it's still taking time, and people have to get comfortable, and we understand that. So, you know, many of our anglers are older guys, you know, in 50s and 60s and 70s, and seems like the older generation, like myself, is a little more apprehensive about jumping right back out there in groups and everything. So we still try to, you know, use social distancing, wear masks where appropriate, things like that. But it's the world we live in.
Right.
So we just have to let things play the course everyone get vaccinated, and I think we'll be back to at least a new normal very soon.
Let's talk about the other regional tournament that took place last Saturday. That was at Lake of the Ozarks in Missouri, very well-known lake, not only for crappie fishing, but bass fishing too. 29 boats fished that event. How'd it go?
It went fantastic, and you know, had some great weights there for Lake of the Ozark. It seemed to outdo itself a little bit. It was a one-day event. Total weight on the one-day event for seven fish was 12.75. So that's really good fish for Lake of the Ozarks, over a pound and a half average. There was multiple fish over 2 pound weight in for the big fish category, and it took a big 2.69 pound slab to win that big fish category. So fantastic fish. Nearly every team in that event, at least on the pro side, nearly every team weighed in a limit of fish. On the amateur side, I think there were two or three teams that did not weigh in. But other than that, the team seemed to do quite well.
Well, and congratulations to Mike Valentine and Jesse Shoemaker from Clinton, Missouri, who ended up being the number one team in the pro division. And they didn't get the biggest fish, but they got the second biggest fish, a 2.62 pound slab. That is an incredible crappie. All right, Daryl, we've talked about what's happened. Let's talk about what's coming up next. April 24th. You are going to Clinton, Missouri. Suspect you might see that team from Clinton, Missouri again. Truman Lake.
Yeah.
Truman Lake, which is the number six top crappie destination in America, according to Wired to Fish. What do you think is going to happen during this one-day tournament?
Oh, we're going to see some fantastic weights there. You know, Truman is not just a good spring crappie lake like many of our lakes. That once the spawn is over, the fish go back deeper, they're harder to find, and the popularity seems to drop off in Lake Spring in many areas. This is not the case at Lake Truman. Lake Truman, I can draw as many boats and catch as many pounds of fish in July as what we're going to see in late April. It's a tremendous fishery for crappie, always has been. You've got so many different types of diversified water there. If you like to single pole with a live scope, it's conducive for that. If you like to long line troll, crankbaits or jigs, it's conducive to that. So about any technique that you like can be applied successfully on Lake Truman.
And I guess that's why it's one of the top crappie lakes in America. All right.
Exactly.
Okay. And after all these regionals, we have regional championships. And I'm guessing you have to do well in the regionals to get to the championship. There's going to be one June 4th and 5th, Lake Cumberland, Kentucky. There's a $25,000 payback that's going to occur there. So lots of money on hand. Tell our listeners more about this tournament and Lake Cumberland, too.
Yeah, basically, this will be made up from guys that have excelled at the one-day events throughout the season in that region. That's in our Region 3 area of tournaments, lakes in Illinois, Ohio, Indiana involved. They go to their championship on Cumberland. And the top 15 in both our amateur division and our pro division at the regional event at Lake Cumberland will go on to fish the $165,000 Classic. Also, points this year are tabulated not only nationally but regionally. So the winners, just by points alone in that region, as well as the other three regions, will share a points purse for the regional win and then qualify to fish against other point teams from the other three regionals at the Classic for an additional purse of $50,000. So it's going to be an exciting 25th anniversary year for Crappie USA all around. You know, that Classic actually went up this year from $125,000 that it's been for the last several years to $165,000 purse. So lots of extra money there with the $50,000 points race involved, lots of extra money there. So it's just going to be fantastic, John.
Oh, it sounds fantastic indeed. And folks, you know, we always think of just bass anglers is having all the fun and competition. But as you've just heard, Crappie USA, and these tournaments, by the way, presented by Bass Pro Shops and Cabela's, they've been doing this for 25 years. It's a lot of fun, a lot of great competition. As you just heard, there's some pretty good money involved, too. If you want to find out more, go to crappieusa.com. That's crappieusa.com. Get involved with competitive crappie fishing. I think you're going to love it. Daryl, thanks for sharing this with us today on America Outdoors Radio.
John, thank you so much. Always a pleasure. And you stay safe.
Let's end this segment the same way we started it, with some music from John Kirkoski, that wonderful Midwestern fishing bard.
Maple Lake, French Lake, Grand Lake, Cedar Lake, Pleasant Lake, Clear Lake, Bass Lake, Collar Lake, Goose Lake, Gull Lake, Round Lake, Prairie Lake, Rice Lake, Sugar Lake, Mud Lake, Long Lake, Ant Lake, Swan Lake, Lake of the Woods. Oh, I fish everywhere.
We've been telling you about Sportsman's Cove Lodge in Southeast Alaska for a while now, and there's a reason. They are the only Alaska lodge we talk about in this show. It's because they're truly Alaska's best lodge. The adventure starts with a float plane ride from Ketchikan, after which you'll get the chance to experience some of the best hospitality, food, and wonderful people you'll ever meet. Wildlife is abundant, from bears and deer to eagles and whales, and let's not forget the reason you're here, the fishing. Halibut, salmon, lingcod, rockfish, true cod, and more. It's all waiting for you in abundance at Sportsman's Cove Lodge. Book your trip today at alaskasbestlodge.com. That's alaskasbestlodge.com for Sportsman's Cove Lodge.
Campers, adventure seekers, hunters, and foodies. No matter the lifestyle, we can all agree on one thing. Great food and great people are worth remembering. At Camp Chef, we don't just make grills. We create each product knowing that a warm meal is always better when it's shared with those we love. Learn more about Camp Chef grills, smokers, and portable cooking equipment at campchef.com. That's campchef.com for a better way to cook outdoors.
You're back in with America Outdoors Radio. I'm John Cruz. We've got one of my favorite guests on the line. It's Brandon Butler. He hails from the Show Me State. He's a syndicated outdoors columnist. He's also got a podcast called Driftwood Outdoors. You really need to check out, especially if you are into Midwest hunting, fishing, and more. Brandon, great to have you back on the air.
Always a pleasure, John. Thanks for having me.
So I was on your website at driftwoodoutdoors.com, checking out some of your recent articles and had to reach out. Now, the regular turkey season is about to open in Missouri. The youth opener has already happened, and boy, oh boy, I understand from the Missouri Department of Conservation, 2,771 turkeys were bagged during the youth opener. Turkey hunting, it's got to be one of the most popular hunting seasons in Missouri, isn't it?
Oh, for sure. Missouri has a really rich history in turkey hunting. In fact, a lot of the population of turkeys in the Midwest comes from bird stock that was actually captured in the Ozarks. So no matter how hard they tried to kill them all down there back in the 30s and 40s, they couldn't get all the turkeys. And I think, you know, around 1935, we estimated a population of a couple thousand remained. And from that couple thousand, we were able to repopulate Missouri, but then also send turkeys to a lot of our neighboring Midwest states as well. I always think of the turkey as a real shining example of conservation for me, because when I was growing up in northern Indiana, in the 80s and 90s, there were no turkeys.
Right.
I went out west for a while, come back, and all of a sudden, I'm sitting in my deer stand, and here come some black bobs through the woods, and I'm like, what is that? And that was the first time I ever saw turkeys in Indiana, and now they attack people's bird feeders. So where there was once turkeys, then there were no turkeys, now the turkeys are back. So it shows what we can do if we want to right some of the wrongs we've committed against wildlife in this country.
When it comes to turkey hunting in Missouri, what is the bag limit? Is it one per day?
No, it's kind of awkward. You can kill two turkeys total, but you can only kill one in the first week. In the first week, it always starts on a Monday. You can hunt Monday through Sunday, and you can kill one. And then there's 2 weeks after that, and you can kill your second turkey, or you can kill your two turkeys. But you can only kill the one in the first week, and you can only kill one per day. And Missouri also shuts down at 1 p.m., so it's kind of a sticking point for me, because I've spent a lot of time fighting on behalf of our Department of Conservation and their scientific model, and the fact that they try to base decisions on science. And now we have all the turkey biologists saying there's no scientific reason why we can't hunt turkeys all day. But you got the old timers saying, well, that's the way it's always been.
Right.
And I'm like, well, and they're on the commission, so they make the rules. So what is it? Are we a scientific-based organization here that is going to do what's right based on science and open up more opportunities for kids to hunt after school and, you know, people to get out after work? There's no scientific impact. Or are we going to be the good old boys club of this is how we always did it? So I kind of feel like it's a double-edged sword or a double standard, and they need to fix that.
I agree. You have no arguments from me on that subject, and I suspect from most of our listeners either. You know, one thing you can do once you're done turkey hunting for the day, though, and you had a great article on this, is go hunting for morel mushrooms. You absolutely love these, don't you?
Oh, man. I put an hour in this morning and got skunked. It's that time of year where there's a lot of colliding opportunities. Here in Missouri, we call it a spring trifecta, killing a turkey, catching a crappie, and finding a morel all in one day. And the crappie are biting, turkeys are gobbling. People are finding morels. They're still finding a lot of the smaller ones. I got out, like I said, and poked around in a likely spot this morning and didn't find any. I have to believe they're out. The May apples are popping, so we know it's the right time, but we're on the front end of it. It's just coming in. So I could gorge myself on morel mushrooms. I absolutely love them.
And I understand you love to eat them sautéed.
Yeah, most of my buddies will fry them. You know, they just put a little, batter on them and fry them, but I think that just eliminates some of the taste. It's kind of like my friends that use hot sauce. I always say, why would you do that? I like to taste my food. So with morels, they have such an amazing taste to me. It's like a rich, buttery, kind of nutty flavor. I just put them in salt water, soak them for a little while, make sure any of the bugs that might have been living inside of them come out, and they're washed clean. And then I heat up a skillet to medium heat, slap down some real butter, and then I saute them, and I'll eat them just one by one, or I'll put them on a ribeye, some venison chops, anything that pairs well with a mushroom.
Brandon, you're making me hungry. Really hungry just thinking about this.
I'm looking out the window right now where I just walk. I'm thinking maybe some of them popped since this morning. I got to get back out there.
What is prime time for morel mushroom hunting in Missouri and the lower Midwest?
Right around May 1st, I would say, prime time. As I said, we're on the front end of it now, and really it's during turkey season. You can kind of find them up till the end of May. But I know people that follow the migration, if you will, of the mushroom. They start down south in Arkansas, and they end up in Michigan. And, you know, you've really got from the beginning of April till the end of May to do it. So, when I was living out in Montana, it was surprising to me that they would bring in migrant workers the way you would see in fruit farms in California or vegetable farms across the Midwest, just to go into burn areas and pick morels, sell them on the side of the road by the pound. So there's opportunities out west too. You can get into an area that's been burned in the last few years, you can really get into some good morel mushroom hunting too.
All right, great advice on the mushrooms. Again, folks, you're listening to America Outdoors Radio. We're talking to Brandon Butler, the man behind Driftwood Outdoors. He's got a weekly column you can read in newspapers all over Missouri, and he also has a podcast. Again, just go to driftwoodoutdoors.com to check that out. Another article that I was reading on your website, and this one really intrigues me. White bass, I understand they spawn during the spring. They head up tributaries. And as you wrote, the action can be hot and heavy. For our listeners who are not familiar with white bass, and we've got a lot of listeners in the Northwest that are not, why don't you tell them about this fish?
Well, they look like a really small striper. You know, they're shaped and colored like a striper. They get up to the world record, I think, is 6 pounds, but like a really good one is 2 to 3 pounds. So anything between that, like 1 and 2 pound range, is going to be your average size fish. So it's about a crappie size fish, and they eat really well. Some people don't like them because they think they taste a little gamey. When you fillet them, you just need to remove some of that red meat, like a walleye or a perch. But they come up in big numbers. And when you get into them, the action's incredibly hot.
So when you think bass, you immediately think of bass gear in terms of spinnerbaits, topwater, frogs, that sort of thing. But I'm guessing crappie and panfish gear is going to probably work better for white bass?
It was really surprising to me when we went out with my friend Chris Nelson. Chris is a guide down on Pomme de Terre in Stockton, a couple lakes in southwest Missouri. Guy knows how to fish crappie and white bass and stuff on those lakes better than anybody, tandem fly outfitters. And you always expect to tie on some expensive, newfangled lure when you're with a guide or something like that. No, it's just like a 1/8 ounce lead head jig with a twisty tail on it. Throw that out and retrieve it. And he said, we're going to fish a couple hours and we're probably not going to get into much. But when they turn on, they turn on. And my podcast partner, Shags, he has like got stuck in the 12-year-old mentality of fishing. The guy is more hardcore, more addicted to fishing than anyone I've ever met in my life. Like, he's missing out by not being a tournament fisherman because he doesn't fish to relax. Like, he fishes to compete, where I'm more of a, like, I'm going to sit down, kick my feet up. Life's stressful. Fishing doesn't need to be. So Chris is in the back of the boat. Shags is in the front of the boat, and they're fishing tournament style. And I'm sitting in the seat in the middle with my feet up on the side. And I caught the first fish, and then I caught the next three fish in a row without even standing up.
Oh, geez.
And man, did it drive those guys crazy. I loved it. But that's the kind of fishing it can be. You know, you can sit there with your feet up and throw a jig out and bring it in. And once they move up into this tributary for the evening, you know, it's really a dawn and dusk bite. It's just on. And then when it's over, it's over. But for a while there, it can be every cast.
Oh, sounds fantastic. Folks, a lot going on in Missouri right now between turkey hunting, morel mushrooms, crappie, and white bass. Lots of spring opportunities, and you can find out more about it by going to driftwoodoutdoors.com and definitely check out the Driftwood Outdoors podcast. Read the articles. I think you're going to really enjoy them just like I do. Brandon, always a pleasure to have you on America Outdoors Radio.
Thanks, John.
This portion of the show was brought to you by our friends at WorkSharp. They're the fine folks out of Ashland, Oregon, who make knife and tool sharpeners that you can use whether you're hunting or fishing or camping or maybe in your shop, maybe in your kitchen, for all of the knives and tools you need sharpened every day when you work and play. WorkSharp tools can be found online at WorkSharpTools.com or you can find them in sporting goods stores and hardware stores all over our great nation. Just look for WorkSharp products to sharpen your knives and your tools, because nothing is worse than trying to get the job done right with a dull blade.
The Dalles in Oregon is your base camp for fishing fun. Reel in big salmon, tangle with steelhead, bass, and walleye, or wrestle a monster sturgeon to the boat. After the day is done, you'll find a variety of lodging options around town. Need to resupply? We've got you covered with sporting goods stores, plus great dining, breweries, wineries, and can't-miss attractions like the Gorge Discovery Center. Plan your fishing getaway today at explorethedalles.com. That's explorethedalles.com.
The election is over, and this is not another political ad. But with a change in president, there is uncertainty. Uncertainty in the market. Will it be up or will it be down? Uncertainty on how the new administration will handle taxes for your retirement. A new report states that the Biden administration may take away key tax benefits to traditional retirement plans. But what if there was a better way? A way to save for retirement tax-free? We can help business owners, freelancers, and regular working folks get on track with their retirement without risk and without taxes. For more information, get your no-cost, tax-free retirement income strategy guide now by calling 888-585-1615. That's 888-585-1615. Find out how sound investment principles can give you a retirement where you eliminate the spend down of your savings and create more income for your retirement tax-free. Call today and get the free guide, 888-585-1615. That's 888-585-1615. Call now, 888-585-1615.
Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, a nationwide group working to keep public lands in public hands. We've helped ban the use of drones for hunting. We help repair wildlife corridors and key riparian areas. We speak up against illegal ATV use. We collaborate with elected leaders to keep public lands in public hands. We're Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, with membership in all 50 states in Canada. Please join this dynamic conservation group. Check us out at backcountryhunters.org.
Are you looking to reel in the marketing opportunity of a lifetime? America Outdoors Radio has sponsorships available, and we offer affordable platforms to reach thousands of listeners. Find out more by contacting John Cruz through his website at AmericaOutdoorsRadio.com.
Next up on America Outdoors Radio, we're turning our attention from crappie, which we've covered a lot during this show, back to bass. And one of my favorite people to talk with about this subject is Walker Smith. He's a managing editor at WiredToFish.com. And I'll tell you what, folks, if you're not checking in on this website on a daily basis, especially if you're a bass and crappie angler, you are missing out. I personally think it's the best resource out there for bass and crappie anglers here in North America. Walker, great to have you on the air again.
Well, it's nice to be here, man. I appreciate those kind words, too, about Wired to Fish.
Well, those kind words are well-earned, and the reason you're on today is because I wanted to share some highlights from your most recent article at Wired to Fish, Three Spring Bass Fishing Myths to Avoid, and I'll be honest, these are myths that I have believed as well. The first one you talk about is you need overcast skies for a good topwater bite. I've heard this all my life. I've believed it. I'm guessing you have too.
Yeah, I mean, as I experiment more, and I think as I mature as an angler, I'm starting to try things outside of the box more, or heck, maybe it's just out of desperation on slow days. But yeah, it's always been pounded in my head that you got to have low light conditions for a good topwater bite. And I was fishing with my wife a couple of years ago, and I had a day, I think my best five were around 28 pounds, if I'm not mistaken.
Wow.
And it was all on a topwater, 85 degrees, not a cloud in the sky.
You know, it's funny you say that. I've always subscribed to the same theory, but not so much the cloudy days as in you have to fish in the morning, the first couple of hours in the morning after sunrise, and right as it gets dark, right at sunset, right at dusk, that's when the topwater bite goes on. And put that topwater plug away in the middle of the afternoon, it won't work. And my fishing buddy has recently proven me wrong on that big time. You can catch fish on a topwater all day, can't you?
That's right, yeah. I mean, honestly, it's really bizarre how it's worked out. But now, you know, if I'm going fishing in the middle of the day, I actually prefer to start with the topwater. As backwards as that seems, you know, in my head, that sunlight really positions bass and makes them set up in very predictable areas. And especially in the spring, pre-spawn, spawn, and post-spawn, for their metabolism slows down for the summer. It's hard to beat. I love either a hollow belly frog or a soft plastic toad. Probably my preference is the toad, just because I'm an impatient angler and I like to cover water. And I like to put that bait in the front of as many fish as I possibly can while I'm out there.
Let's talk about another spring bass fishing myth, and this one has to do with the spawn. This myth, you have to get into the skinny water to find those spawning bass, and you found this isn't necessarily the case.
Yeah, I think I've referenced this before in earlier conversations with you. The biggest bass I ever caught, I wasn't sight fishing her, but I caught her off of a bed, I'm pretty sure, and she was 13.14 pounds. And she was in about 2 foot of water, but had about 15 foot of water within a boat length of her, if that makes sense. So I've done some digging on this, and I've looked back on my personal biggest catches this time of year. And I really do believe that not all, but some big bass, big females love to get up and spawn close to deep water. That's like how some humans might like to live closer to the interstate than some people. That deep water, if conditions change, they pump their tail a couple times, they can hide out during a cold front in that deeper water, or then once it passes, move back up to the shallows to lay their eggs. So, you know, that skinny water, it looks awesome, it's very tempting, and there are fish back there, don't get me wrong, but those fish don't replenish. Those are, a lot of times, are resident fish. So if you're a tournament fisherman fishing a multi-day event or whatever it is, you go catch those fish one day, but they're not going to be back there tomorrow.
Interesting.
They're gone.
Very interesting. One other spring myth, and this is one I've definitely fallen prey to. Sight fishing is the only way to go when it comes to fishing, especially the spawn. I'm always sight fishing for bass, looking for those beds, looking for the bass on the beds. And you've had great success fishing dirty water, which is completely counterintuitive.
Yeah, I kind of feel like when I fish a tournament around here, kind of feel like a salmon swimming upstream, because at Blastoff, everybody's running south to the clear water, and I'm the only ding-dong running north to the dirty water. I don't know. I think it has more to do with my preference and my mindset fishing. I'm just not the kind of guy that's going to sit there and sight fish a bass for an hour. I am not like that at all. Like I mentioned with the soft plastic toad, I want to play the numbers game. I want to put my bait in front of as many fish as I possibly can throughout a day. And, you know, and I look back at a lot of the big bass catches that I have covered over the years with Wired to Fish all around the country. Man, so many of them come on like a white Colorado bladed spinner bait and dirty water this time of year. And, you know, you start putting pieces like that together in your head. Of course, I'll go try to replicate that success on my home bodies of water. And sure enough, I mean, it's not guaranteed, but I certainly have more confidence because, man, I just if I can see a bass, I feel like it can see me. And that's just it's a mental thing that is hard to overcome. And I'm a big believer, if you're not confident in something in bass fishing, you need to change. And I'm just not confident with sight fishing.
Three myths to avoid, three ways to go against the grain and try something new this spring. Like Walker, you're going to probably find out these three methods are going to probably work out for you, and your fishing buddies are going to be saying, man, I got to be trying that too. In the meantime, if you want to find more fishing advice when it comes to bass and crappie fishing, the place to go to, Wired to Fish, that's the number two, wiredtofish.com. There's new stuff there just about every day. And again, if you're not keeping up, you are missing out. Walker, thanks for sharing this with us today on America Outdoors Radio.
Always a pleasure, buddy.
Turning to the spring turkey hunting season, it is upon us. And if you're looking for a shotgun, I've got one for you. It's the single shot turkey camo shotgun from Henry Repeating Arms. You'll love the Mossy Oak Obsession camo pattern on this 12 gauge. And this pattern is actually the official camo pattern of the National Wild Turkey Federation. You're also going to love the adjustable fiber optic sights that will help you get on target right away. And if you want to mount a scope or maybe a red dot sight, you can do that too, because this shotgun, it's drilled and tapped for you to do it. Want to find out more about this highly accurate, made in America, good looking single shot shotgun with a lifetime satisfaction guarantee? Then head to henryusa.com to find a dealer near you, or talk to the award-winning customer service staff. They'll help you out too. And don't forget to ask for your free catalog and decals while you're there. That website again, henryusa.com. Getting back to crappie fishing,
it's time to talk record fish.
From Outdoor Life, we learn Wolfgang Kratzenberg and his son Jeffrey of Verona, Kentucky, were crappie fishing on March 21st on 135-acre Bullock Pen Reservoir when Wolfgang hooked into an oversized fish on a really small red and chartreuse crappie tube jig. At first, Wolfgang figured he had hooked into a carp or a catfish because of the fight that fish had in her, but when he got said fish to the boat, it turned out it was a really, really big sawguy. Just how big, you ask? How about a fish measuring 27 inches long with a girth of 17.5 pounds? Wolfgang knew he had a potential record on his hands, but he had to contact 10 area stores before a local Costco agreed to wheel out a certified scale to the parking lot where he could weigh it in front of witnesses. That saw guy ended up weighing 9.05 pounds, beating the previous Kentucky state record that was caught out of the Cumberland River 2 years ago. Way to go, Wolfgang. That's a day of crappie fishing you won't soon forget.
Congratulations on your new record.
It's certainly been a crappie sort of show, and hopefully you didn't feel like it was a crappy one. I know I sure enjoyed talking to our great guests, Scott Croft, Daryl Van Vactor, Brandon Butler, and Walker Smith, and I hope you enjoyed hearing from them too. On a personal note, I've got to let you know that America Outdoors Radio pro staffer Rusty Johnston and I did try our hand at a Berkeley Big Bass Tournament last weekend at Eastern Washington's Potholes Reservoir, and I'd like to say we won, but we didn't. No, we were one of 200 teams that were registered for this event. Really big tournament when it comes to the Pacific Northwest, and we both caught a couple of bass, even caught a nice trout, but trout's not what you want in a Berkeley Big Bass Tournament. Our congratulations go to Tate Webb and Micah Hart. They won two of the hourly weigh-ins, got $4,000 for that, and they also won a $42,000 Skeeter bass boat from Nixon's Marine out of the Tri-Cities in Washington. Way to go, Micah and Tate. I hope you use that boat to win some more tournaments in the future, and maybe, just maybe, Rusty and I will do a little bit better the next tournament we fish. Until next time, do take care, do be blessed, and do remember this. It is your country and your outdoors, so get out there and enjoy it.